National Weather Service wants to bring the whole country under one forecast. Stay tuned. Good afternoon. You're listening to KSCP 830 AM Sandpoint. I'm Marissa Williams with some local news on Tuesday, November 15th, 2016. More bad news for commercial crabbers. The Eastern Aleutian District won't open for tanner crab fishing in 2017. The small fishery usually opens in January, with just a few boats harvesting barbi in state waters around Unalaska and Akutan Islands. But a recent trawl survey has forced the Alaska Department of Fish and Game to close it after the assessment revealed how low numbers of mature males. Miranda Westfall is the area management biologist for ADFNG.
It's just the way of the crab fisheries right now, where we're just sort of in a lull and a low point with tanner crab fisheries.
The state has also closed the much larger Bering Sea tanner crab fishery as a result of low abundance. That population is distinct from the Eastern Aleutian stock, but Westfall says both can blame warm waters and natural cycles for the recent slump in barbi. All three sections of the Eastern Aleutian District will be closed next year. The Makushin/Shan Bay section came closest to opening, but it still missed the minimum guideline harvest level by about 40%. While the closure won't affect big commercial vessels, Westfall says losing the fishery is hard on local crabbers with small operations.
It's a nice small fishery. It's close to home. It's only fished during daylight hours. There will be a couple fishermen that are disappointed it's not opening, but, you know, there's always hope for next season.
That's because the tanner stock is showing some recruitment of juvenile crab. Westfall says the fishery could improve in the next few years as those young barbi mature. Meanwhile, there's still a chance that the Bering Sea tanner crab fishery could open for the upcoming season. The Alaska Board of Fisheries has agreed to consider a limited quota for the western half of the fishery. The board will make a final decision at their January meeting in Kodiak. The National Weather Service has announced plans to integrate its infrastructure, reduce field office hours, and move towards one weather forecast nationwide. The Weather Service says this will improve their services, but one employee union leader says it'll actually degrade them. KYUK's Charles Enoch has the story.
The National Weather Service recently announced their plan to, quote, evolve their services and infrastructure, according to a recorded video conference given to KYUK by the NWS. The plan calls for producing one forecast for the entire country at their office in Washington, D.C., instead of producing regional and local forecasts throughout the country. Under the new plan, local forecasters will take the forecasts from the main office and tailor them for the area to send out. The NWS says this will help reduce duplication and make their reports more accurate and consistent, but the NWS Employee Organization's president, Dan Sobian, says this will make the forecasts less accurate because many places have unique weather patterns.
There are a lot of people in Washington, D.C. that don't even know where Bethel, Alaska is, and I'm guessing that there are a lot of unique idiosyncrasies to the weather there. There's like thousands of reasons why it would be best to have forecasts coming from forecasters who know the area, and that will cease to happen.
How it will change the way forecasts are delivered is unclear. KYUK contacted the NWS field offices in Alaska but could not get a comment by deadline. The new national plan for the Weather Service will reduce the hours their 122 field offices are open. Instead of 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the offices will only operate part-time. The local staff will not be spending much time launching weather balloons to test winds and atmosphere conditions. Instead, they will be gathering data, going to meetings and training, and educating people in their areas. The plan calls for automating the weather balloon program. Managers said there was currently no plan to reduce the staff, but they did say they were planning to more strategically use the staff's time. Managers say the goal is to provide better impact-based decision support services, or IDSS, which translates into providing information to decision makers on the state and federal level to help them be able to save more lives during storms, floods, or severe weather events, which are occurring more frequently in the face of climate change. NWS says the plan to go one forecast for the entire nation has been in the works for some time, but Sobian says he can't confirm when the process began.
Well, they did it in secret, so I can't tell you that. They held secret meetings and made the people in those meetings sign non-disclosure agreements. We didn't find out about it till about 3 weeks ago.
The National Weather Service plans to start testing and evaluating these changes within the next year, with full implementation by 2018. Currently, Alaska's field offices are located in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau. Reporting for KYUK in Bethel, I'm Charles Enoch.
Researcher Elizabeth Figgis has been traveling across the state this fall to present her research on the halibut fisheries in southeast Alaska. She's a PhD candidate at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. KBBI's Shayla Farzan sat down with Figgis in Homer recently to talk about her findings.
So in 2015, you interviewed halibut fishermen about the new Observer program. Can you explain a little bit about the Observer program for people who maybe don't know about it?
So back in 2013, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council restructured the whole North Pacific Observer program, which includes a lot of different fleets all around Alaska of different sizes. And for the first time, they actually incorporated the halibut fleet into that. Now, all halibut fishermen both pay into the program and are subject to being randomly chosen to carry observers. So what I wanted to do in 2015 was go out and talk about what the new program has been doing in these different communities, what fishermen think about it, if they've been a part of it yet, and what kinds of data they're likely to collect.
So you went out to four different communities in southeast Alaska, Hoonah, Juneau, Sitka, and Petersburg, and you interviewed 78 halibut fishermen. What kinds of questions were you asking these fishermen?
I asked them to pretend that they had ultimate control over how data was collected from their boat. And I asked them to rank their preference between going back to the way things used to be, which was a system of a kind of mixed logbook and port sampling technique. And then they also could choose to keep a really detailed logbook as a second choice, which detailed every species they encountered and how many of them. The third choice was to carry a human observer to collect those data. And the fourth choice was to carry a camera, some sort of electronic monitoring. And so that first task to rank those things then spurred a larger conversation about what each person thought we should be doing out there on the water to collect data from directed fishing fleets.
Can you tell me a little bit about what you found?
Fishermen were very strongly in agreement with one another about how they ranked their different preferences for data collection. Generally speaking, fishermen preferred the least obtrusive data collection strategy. And by this, I mean they would prefer to go back to the way things were. So the system they already had set up with port sampling and a pretty simple logbook about halibut. Their second option that people tended to choose was keeping a detailed logbook. The third option came in as electronic monitoring, and human observers came in kind of at a level of one, or really not preferred by the fishermen in my group. And so one of the reasons that I'm up here in Homer and traveling around a little bit through Alaska is to learn how those basic preliminary findings might differ for people in this community who fish, as well as hear from people who don't halibut fish, what they think about how we manage fisheries, how we collect data, and also how research like mine might contribute to that process.
So you grew up in the Midwest, basically as far away from the ocean as humanly possible. And I'm wondering, you know, what motivates you to do this kind of work?
I had grown up with this idea that commercial fishing was not only basically a dead industry, but that it was also, when it did take place, a huge scale, heavy industrial operation. It completely blew me away that there are large fleets of people in Alaska that you put these lines down hundreds and hundreds of feet, and then you pull out these fish one by one that are actually enough to pay your bills for the year and have a sustainable family business. I got really intrigued with the way that we manage these fisheries because I heard a lot of conflicting different stories about how easy it is, for example, to buy in as a young person to some of these. So those sorts of opportunities and challenges have really fascinated me and really got me interested in understanding both how to make this job and lifestyle an option into the future for people, as well as how to make